You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web.
Darcy Clark shares Volt, a new open source package manager, which he has been building with NPM creator Isaac Schluter and Node TSC member Ree Adorno.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. My name's Tracy. You can follow me on Twitter at Lady Lee or on LinkedIn at Tracy S. Lee. And I'm here with my co-host today, Adam Rackus.
Hello.
Hi, Adam. Darcy, we always joke that Adam has, Adam has 100 followers on LinkedIn or 100 connections on LinkedIn and he won't add me.
Oh no.
Yeah, he says that every episode. And I do not have more friends. I'll check after this. But we're here with Darcy, and Darcy was invited by our good friend and co-host Ben Lesh, who cannot be found right now. He got lost.
Yeah.
What do you think he's doing though? What is he angry about right now?
I think he's hiding somewhere. He can't be observed to us today.
This guy.
So Darcy, okay, where do we find you on the internet first off?
You can find me on Twitter at Darcy, just my first name,
okay.
Which is pretty awesome. But everywhere else on the internet, I'm Darcy Clark, my full name.
Nice. Awesome. And you are from Toronto, Canada,
yeah.
Home of the nice people.
We try to be. I think I try to do my best to represent the best of Canada for sure.
And you've done some pretty cool things. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I have, 20 years of engineering experience plus. Started off building some startups in my early 20s and actually built a company called Themify, which was like a WordPress theme company. And it's actually still around today, supported by my co-founder there. Did a bunch of freelance work as well. And worked with enterprises, startups, digital agencies, before landing eventually at NPM Inc., where I helped to lead the largest package manager in the world, and did that for about 4 years, helped, that company get through its acquisition of GitHub in 2020, and then left back in December of 2023 to start my own company.
Nice. You're at NPM from 2020 to 2023.
Yeah, okay. From 2019.
So,
yeah.
Oh, nice. How fun.
The Pokemon theme song goes and
Ben
a while
Lesh
Ben
joined.
Appears.
Yes. I know what you were actually angry about. You were actually angry about signals and observables, but we were trying to figure out what you were upset about on the internet, probably tweeting and not joining this podcast. But here you are.
Some noob was using RxJS wrong.
And then what inspired you? Like now you're part of, I'll let you introduce it. I don't want to steal your
sure.
thunder.
Yeah, it's VLT. And you can pronounce it Volt, just like, electricity Volt. And that company I founded last year, and I've brought on actually the creator of NPM, Isaac Schluter. And he's the former CEO
of
NPM Inc. So we just announced that last week, along with Roy Adorno, who used to be on the NPM CLI team as well. And he's joining us from Google, where he was doing some Node stuff. And he's still sitting on the Node TSC there as well. So we've got a pretty good core team right now of folks that know about the JavaScript ecosystem and how to build developer tools and package management tools for it. So pretty excited about that. And we've got some good investors as well that are behind us.
Amazing. Cause I know Isaac started NPM when he taking a break from life, So I feel like if he joined you, it seems like he's like pretty intentional about what he joins. So I feel like, yeah. Y'all going to be married for a while.
we work together quite closely at NPM and we all worked together before the acquisition. And then after the acquisition, we worked together for a bit before we all parted ways. And then I got the team back together here.
Yep.
So I'm really excited about what we can do. And
So Darcy, is this thing you're working on going to solve all my open source author issues of like hating modules and hating the TC39 for creating new types of modules and hating people for wanting different types of modules?
See, Ben was angry somewhere. He brought it.
Yeah, we've talked with a number of developers, and I have definitely done a bunch of research on this. Our team has talked with a number of companies and made like engineering teams. And that sentiment that you just said is one of the common threads that we've heard from folks and is indeed one of the problems we're trying to solve for. So authoring essentially a package that works everywhere has been really tough over the last, I would say 2-3 years has gotten really, really tough. And we want to help with that. So Isaac actually was working in the space before joining Volt. He built a project called Tushy.
Tushy. I'm using Tushy. I am. I'm actually using Tushy.
So
I'm sad I didn't get to mention it first because I like the name. But yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you know, certain things come out of it, and it's an interesting tool. So it's TSHY. So TypeScript hybridizer, and so it essentially helps you. Create packages that are for these dual module loading sort of situation. So that's pretty sad, and it's tough that it's a tough situation for the ecosystem to have to sort of adopt brand new tools into their publishing pipelines versus just, you know, innovating on the actual infrastructure that distributes the software, right? So I think JSR, you know, the work that they're doing there, Dino's doing there is interesting. And we've definitely pointed our scope at a similar problem in terms of distributing a source package and then having variants fall out of that as well. So that's one of the pieces of tooling that we want to build for the ecosystem.
Well, I think the whole like building and package distribution and like the different types of modules and all that, like that hurdle has probably slowed the web down over the last decade, a ridiculous amount. Because there are people who are really, really, really talented, smart developers who they could publish libraries that we could all be using that do amazing things, but they end up hitting this wall of like, how do I make this work in the browser and Node and keep these other people happy? And they're like, nope, and they're out. Like, why would they bother when all they really wanted to do is just write code?
Totally. Yeah, we've seen some tools that have come out and I think unlocked a lot of value for folks. Like Unpackage is a great example of some infrastructure that Michael Jackson wrote that folks are like, oh, I can just access the contents of the package through a CDN and I can consume it directly and hotlink it and there's a ton of value that has come out of that project. And very similarly, I think that people really just want to distribute the source of their packages and not have to worry about all the matrix of potential environments and runtimes that we're running into and flagging essentially the supports or what is supported, I think also is something that we haven't, you know, NPM hasn't done a good job at that either, like providing package analysis, which is why, you know, companies like Socket exist now to help you really understand the contents of the packages you're consuming.
NPM audit is not my friend. It tries to be my friend, but mostly it just bothers me. I want it to stop.
Sure.
It seems like it's gotten better. It seems like it's gotten better over the last year or so. But
it's not true. As the former engineering manager of the NPM CLI, I apologize on behalf of that tool. I've done some talks in the last year about supply chain security, and one of the slides I show is the process in which somebody does a NPM audit. They get a set of advisories. So let's say 10 critical errors to, you know, moderate errors. They are then told to run NPM on it fix to resolve these problems. They do that and they end up with like an exponential more than that. So like 800 now vulnerabilities are found. So unfortunately that, you know, you would say that you're probably left in a worse, you know, situation than you were started out as. And so it's an unfortunate side effect that we're not able to better navigate the CVE ecosystem and provide better audit tooling, but I'm hoping to help with that. So,
yeah. I wonder if I just think it's gotten better because I've learned to ignore the I bet that's what it is. I bet I run it and I'm like, oh, everything worked. And I just like turn my head and go about something else. And I just, yeah.
It's a really unfortunate that a lot of the incentives for the security industry to present this kind of information is that they want the, you know, highest visibility, most impactful projects to essentially get flagged as being vulnerable. You know, there's sort of perverse incentives for them to find, you know, but not benign, but like code paths that you may not even execute in these packages that are deeply nested in sort of your transitive dependency stack. So, you know, Lodash or Express and Express as a development dependency might get flagged, and you know you don't care about it because you know that you're sanitizing the input that's going into these tools. And so unfortunately the code paths are never even fully realized or exposed to being, you know, potentially exploited. So yeah.
Oh my gosh. So what is the future, you feel like? Like what does this mean? Like all the innovation in this space that you're innovating in, like what do you think the next few years looks like?
Yeah, I'm super hopeful. JavaScript is amazing. I love it. I think we all love writing JavaScript. And I think that there's a new wave of innovation and a new wave of investments being made into particularly like infrastructure. So not just the tooling, but the actual infrastructure that's hosting your JavaScript and helping you get things done, including, you know, package publishing and consumption. And I'm really hopeful that, you know, we're all going to, you know, make it a lot easier for folks that currently develop for the ecosystem, but also new folks that are coming into the ecosystem to make that on-ramp a lot easier. It still frustrates me today that there isn't an easy way to create a package in NPM by clicking a button, right? And so that kind of, you know, that kind of wall to getting started, that kind of can be really frustrating to some folks to not really have easy ways to create and contribute. And I think that potentially, as Ben was saying, like might be the reason why we don't see more people creating packages we can all consume.
I remember my first NPM package I created. I got really drunk with Jay Phelps on Thanksgiving and I wanted to add Mario coins to my app. So when you clicked, it would like little Mario coins would pop out of your mouse. And that was.
That's awesome. Is it still up? Is it still some,
you know? I mean, we did delete it, but it was a long, long, long time ago. It's a long, long time ago. Do you remember that, Ben? Were we even friends?
I also remember that, like, Jay's good. Jay also, on April 1st of like 2016 or something, added a new operator to ArcGIS, and it was the smooth operator. And like, if you used it, it would just play the smooth operator song if you were in a browser. Pretty good.
Are you an F1 fan as well?
No, other than the F1 key, but I like the F2 key better. But no, I don't watch a lot of racing. I'm someone that I don't sit and watch a lot of sports in general. Like I feel like I miss out because there's a lot of dudes that are like, oh, sports ball. And I'd be like, yeah, I don't really follow it. But
somebody made an office comment today. Were you on that call, Ben? Somebody made an office comment. I had no idea what they were referencing. So.
Oh, yeah, I will.
We're all missing out.
The office reference. Yeah.
Well, let's take a little, you know, left turn over here. We'll get Darcy's take on this, actually. So Ben and Adam were arguing on the internet the other day.
We were.
They were.
Oh,
and, you know, arguing is a strong word, but Adam said, "What did you say, Adam?" He said, "I could just look it up," and then Ben said, "Well, actually, you should not just look it up. You guys can explain this."
This is the thing where, like, you know, Adam's saying you don't need to know fundamentals to land a career. And that's absolutely true. I was just saying that it does matter at some point. Like, I do think that there's a lot of people that get the message of, like, you don't really need to know this. You can just Google everything. And it's like, well, I mean, yeah, that's sort of true, but.
My point was a little more subtle. So I'm big on fundamentals. I'll read a lot of pages on programming language, root fundamentals, so I know the language really well. I think my point was more that what is fundamental to being a web developer changes over time. And so things like default form verbs is something that just doesn't come up very often for a huge number of people, because most devs are not taking a form and posting it directly to an endpoint. They're just scraping up those values and manually sending them off to some JSON service, typically. And so what the default verb is, people just don't know because they don't ever come across it. And so you get these people who post the polls, like, look how dumb web developers are now. They don't know these fundamentals that I had to know 20 years ago when I was doing PHP. It's like, well, it's not quite as relevant anymore based on the stacks that people are using today. That was more the point that I was going for.
Right. I think how much faster their app would load, though, if they just use the form and
get it. You'd be driving a Lamborghini, too.
Yeah. No, thanks.
PHP dev.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna keep seeing you guys on Twitter and like bringing it up on this podcast, because I think it's funny to, like, everybody else who looks at that is like, oh my gosh, Adam and Ben are really mad at each other right now, you know? And then like we hear y'all, it's like, no, they're probably not, but look how reasonable you all are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, if I meet someone who's like a very senior dev and they don't understand, like, if they're supposed to be like, you know, a web architect and they don't understand that they could use a form to post to the same, you know, service that they're using, you know, their fetch to do, like, that's probably not a good sign. But I mean, if someone's a junior dev or mid-level dev or whatever, that's fine. Even up to senior-ish, like, but you get up into like, I'm a staff engineer and I'm like, okay, well, you don't know how a form tag works. It's probably not good.
But yeah. Term developer has definitely been stretched a little bit. I know that GitHub records that it's got about 100 million developers on the platform. And I've seen other stats that there's only roughly, you know, 30 million developers in the entire world. So,
really?
Yeah. So, you know, I think to Adam's point, like, I definitely think there's shades of what developer may mean to some folks. And it's definitely changed over my career. You don't need to know half the stuff that I thought was fundamental, you know, at the onset of my career, right? And but to your point, like, then, like, you need to know what to Google sometimes. So just saying you can Google something doesn't actually mean that you will get the results you need, because you don't know what you don't know.
Right? Well, how does somebody get so good at debugging, though? Like, that's what's been really impressive to, like, you know, pairing with Ben, for example. And, you know, I can tell because I'll pair with different levels. Okay. So there's two levels below Ben. There's a lot of levels below Ben, but there's two levels below Ben I paired with. And then I paired with Ben on the same day. And like, who wants to pair with anybody else when you pair with Ben? Like, nobody. I don't. This is my problem, Ben, by the way. This is my issue with life.
You're breaking up things over time and you notice the patterns and you know right what to look for when something
right. I mean,
it's wild.
I've done the same thing an auto mechanic with 25 years of experience does with a car. Like,
it's, you turn it, like, on,
the cars
turn it
have
on.
Changed over time, but I've been doing it every day for so long that it's like, oh, I hear this knocking over here. It's probably this problem or whatever. Like,
But it's really debugging, in my opinion, that makes somebody a great developer, because, like, there's, you know, and my annoying part about my life is I know enough to know that that is not the right answer. And I know there's a better way, but I'm not good enough to know what the better way is. So then I'm just stuck. But I know enough to know that that is not the right way.
Before we get back to our conversation, we wanted to say thank you to This.Labs, who is the sponsor of today's show. If you need help with a project that has failed to deliver on time or are in need of a team that feels true ownership over your engineering projects, definitely hit up This.Labs. They specialize in helping business leaders ensure their strategic digital initiatives stay on track. Trusted by companies like PlayStation, Capital One, Herman Miller, PayPal, and T-Mobile, you can find them at this.co. That's THISDOT.co. Now, let's return to our show.
So that the I think the thing that I was thinking about with the whole like knowing fundamentals thing is like, yeah, I don't think that most developers need to know all the fundamentals, but like there's like this hierarchy, right? Where there's a few people, like you look at the field of all developers and it kind of tapers up to a few people steering the ship at each one of their companies, right? Or steering the ship at each one of their orgs or whatever. And I would hope that the people steering the ship have a like broad enough knowledge of the different ways they could do things that they understand like, oh, I could use a form for this, or I could use this, you know, tan stack thing, whatever they're doing, like to drive their ship the smartest direction. And like the people underneath them, no, they don't need to know these things, but like, I really hope the people at the top do. And if people think they're going to make it to the top without understanding those things, they can, but they're not going to be able to give people like guidance that is the most informed, right? Like you need to, there's not only do you need to stay on top of all the newest and latest stuff, but you also need to know that like the fundamentals of how these things work at a certain level, not like you know, the juniors and even the senior level engineers. Like if you're not driving the direction for your org, then you probably don't need to know all the things. But if you are, then it's probably a good idea that you do know. Like if you're making architectural decisions, like it's probably a good idea to know like the fundamentals pretty well, because those are the things that really matter. And then they also really matter when you're doing things like working on, you know, frameworks and low level, you know, close to the metal stuff that other people are using. But
well, I've seen many startups in my life, and I think some startups, probably very similar to you all, Darcy, you know, come together and you have really smart people who come together. So, but I think one issue with really smart people coming together is that, you know, you have, you know, four or five or however many really strong opinions and really great ways. And it's just like, do awesome stuff. But how do you all come together on like a vision and make sure that it's going somewhere versus, you know, just a bunch of cool stuff being built?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of experience as a manager and leading folks at different companies, different sizes of companies, oftentimes having to work with folks that are a lot smarter than me. So I usually take the practice of I'm likely not the smartest person in the room. And how do we, you know, how do we drive consensus towards a common shared understanding of the problem space, as well as like the goals or what success looks like. So you've probably found this as well. Like the definition of done is wildly different at different companies and oftentimes not well documented. And so like, when you're trying to reach some sort of milestone, you should really understand what it is you're trying to achieve and what, you know, that definition of done looks like. But yeah, in terms of getting people together and on the same page, especially at our startup, we've just recently done an in-person offsite, which was really nice. We all went up to Montreal and got together in person, which was super helpful for, you know, both collaborating and ensuring that we're on the same page, but also for the vibes. You know, it's hard to know what the young kids say. It's like all about the vibes. So that can be really helpful, is just to remember that we're all human. And that was really good for us to also sort of write down what we thought the strategic vision of the company was and how we were going to sort of take the next few steps forward. And you don't have to have a plan, I think, for the next 5 years always, but at least if you know that you're working and coordinating and working the sort of pointed in the same direction. I think that's helpful. So yeah, having a lot of years of experience helps, I think, with a leader that understands there are some going to be like strong opinions, really smart folks with potentially big egos, and you try to, get those out of the room as much as possible, and just, debate ideas and not people's sort of feelings necessarily. But, yeah, that's how I handle it.
Yeah. So Ben, have you been to Montreal?
Montreal.
Have we been to Montreal before together? No. Yeah. When I think Montreal, I think like a loft. If you guys can picture a loft, and in this loft are circus performers who are on unicycles and, trapeze people swinging from the. This is real, right, Darcy? Like that is Montreal. Cirque du Soleil.
Of Montreal, but that's,
But that's what I picture people living in Montreal like, because that's what I saw actually when I went to Montreal. I just saw people like,
I picture Montreal like, like how in the United States, like every single city has a thing that, unless they already have casinos, they have a thing that comes up in the ballot every single year to add a casino there. I view Montreal kind of the same, only I think on the ballot every year, they're like voting to move Montreal to Europe. Every year on the ballot, they're like, this year we use the tax dollars to move Montreal to Europe. And everyone's like, yay. Everyone's like, no, yeah. Can't do that. And
they've had a few referendums, and that's very interesting. It does feel like another country sometimes, because French is definitely spoken the most in Quebec there, and it's really nice. You kind of feel like you are in a different country, but you've just gone a couple hours away from.
Yeah. Does the French speaking news in Canada do the same thing that the English speaking news does, and like 100% focus on comparing themselves to the United States in a favorable way? Like the entire, because I live in Michigan, right? So we get like the broadcast from Canada, like over the air, and
right.
Like if you watch the news, it was like you could play a drinking game. You could be like, okay, every single time they compare themselves to the United States, like take a drink, and like you'd be smashed by the end of the 30-minute block most days.
That's a part of the Canadian identity, is to consistently compare and contrast ourselves to our brethren in the South. And
which is hilarious to someone from Michigan, because if you dropped someone in Michigan and said, hey, you're in Canada, everyone would believe you until they saw a license plate or money. Like they're just like, okay.
Minnesota as well. I've been asked if I'm from Minnesota before with my accent. So.
Oh, well, Darcy, what else are you excited about on the internet? I mean, I'm actually pretty proud of us not saying the buzzwords that typically come up on this podcast. And I won't say them.
I'm concerned if I'm going to say a whole bunch of them.
Oh, I'm just so excited now to see.
No, in terms of the future, like I'm very excited about probably three different things, like speed. Performance mm-hmm. is one of those things that we're constantly enamored with. And mm-hmm. and definitely if you're going to be building developer tools, developers care about speed. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely top of mind for me. And I'm excited about sort of all the innovation I've seen in that. And I mm-hmm. still think that there's huge opportunities for us to eke out performance wins in terms of, package management and, mm-hmm. and consuming from the ecosystem. The other one is reliability, which has more to do with standardizing package management and fancy graph resolution. I've been doing some work with the OpenJS Foundation and some folks that are cross-cutting across the ecosystem to try to help standardize and sort of document the fields in package JSON. And hopefully eventually we'll get to a point where, we can build up, a potential AST from your dependency graph that's sort of standardized, or nice. You could write some acid tests around that. I like in sort of our current state as being like pre-HTML5 days, when browsers would interpret your, HTML documents in a different way. I think that's the same sort of situation we're at with your package JSON and the different package managers all having a different interpretation. And I think that's a bit dangerous for consumers, but it's also exciting to think about where we could get if we all go on the same page and we wrote some standards in that space. So that's something I'm really excited about and I'm working towards, and hope others will join me on that. And then the last, I would say, so speed, reliability, and then sustainability. So I still think there's huge opportunity for us to find new ways to sort of make open source sustainable. And I think the, you know, with recent supply chain attacks, there's going to be more and more emphasis on this in terms of how we really do make our ecosystem more sustainable. And I've got some ideas on how we could do that. But definitely there's, it needs to be some sort of alignment of incentives, and providing that new value in the infrastructure side might unlock some opportunities to rev share back with the open source ecosystem.
So. I know that there's like in NPM, you know, there's the whole like, you know, these packages can be funded. I think it's just like the ask of, you know, but I know Ben's
I introduced that actually.
Yeah. Nice. So,
one of the first things I shipped in NPM when I got there in 2019 was the Package Explorer experience. Mm-hmm. So before that, for like 9-10 years, they had never built a web interface for exploring the contents of packages, similar to what you see with like GitHub repositories, which I thought was kind of crazy. So we shipped that, and then we shipped the package funding field, which, you know, a number of people have taken advantage of to, you know, to identify that they would essentially take sponsorship or donations and provide information about how to do that. So. Mm-hmm.
Ben, do you have that turned on?
No. I'm waiting for them to just give me a penny a download. That's all I want. One penny a download. It'll be fine.
I can't write that check. Yeah.
But then people are going to like start doing weird, like whatever you incentivize people to do is, you know, or disincentivize people to do, you know, they'll optimize for, you know, doing the thing that you don't want them to do.
All I need is just a couple months. Like I'm not asking for a lot, just for like 3-4 months of a penny a download, I'm good. I'll quit after that.
Well, Darcy, should people start using Vault now, like instead of NPM?
So we haven't launched the product yet, but you can go sign up at vlt.sh to hear when we do release. We will have an alpha. So there is going to be a limited group that gets access first. There is a couple of things we'll probably roll out before then. So just be on the lookout as well on our blog, or feel free again to sign up, and we'll message folks when we've made some news there. Because we have a couple things to release before we do infrastructure things.
More. And when is it, you know, I know that the ever, when's the release?
I can't say right now, but you know, soon.
Soonish, yeah. It's like asking when the next Svelte release is, or was it Solid that I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for the Solid. Am I waiting for both of them? Can't remember. But Solid, I know.
And then Svelte 5 are both releasing right about now.
Yes, but not the new Solid release, right? Which I was thinking. I was thinking that would be released like. I was like hoping December or something, or Q1.
I heard Quick and Svelte, was it, got together, and they're actually now Squick. Is that right?
Sounds like an April.
No Fool's way.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that was an April Fool's joke.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm like, what blog post? I saw some blog post yesterday, but I forgot that yesterday was April Fool's Day. So, but anyways, it was good hanging out. Thanks, Darcy, for joining us. We're so excited about what you're doing in the ecosystem. I'm really excited about this package JSON thing that you're doing. That's pretty cool. It's hard work, y'all, and everybody should join open source and get involved, because there is a place and a home for everyone. So anyways, we'll see you next time.
This podcast is sponsored by This.Labs, a framework agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's THISDOT.co/labs. For all of your friends and you. Do-ba-do-do-do, yeah, query, yeah, query. Shout it, yeah, query.
show porn.